everyone. Happy Thursday to you. Nothing new here at TechStrong. Actually, there's plenty new. I hope you've been keeping abreast of some of our announcements. Later on today on TechStrong TV, you can find out more about our announcement of partnering up or being acquired by the Futura Group. But for now, you're watching TechStrong Gang. Welcome back, everyone. Yes, it was a bit of an unusual opening here because it's been a bit of an unusual day or two here at TechStrong. We made a major announcement here. We're looking forward to some really shaking up the world of media. But on TechStrong Gang, we're going to keep it the way we always do. We'll have our gang members talking about stuff that we think you want to know about. Today, we're going to talk about what's the real state of DevOps. We're going to talk about how are developers embracing AI, how, and where does DevOps meet MLOps on the road here, and maybe more than that. Let me introduce you quickly to who we've got on the gang today. Joining us remotely from Raleigh, he is our AI expert, the one and only Mark Hinkle. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Great, Alan. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's good to have you here. Joining us in our Boca Raton headquarters, to my immediate left, it's really very easy to tell the difference between them, but to my immediate left is our Echo Insights editor, as well as contributor, Bonnie Schneider. Bonnie, welcome.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Thank you. And then on my far left, again, hailing from the Bronx, actually, was it far, not Cardinal Spellman?
It was Cardinal Spellman.
At a Cardinal Spellman High School, Mike Vizard, our chief content officer. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys, everybody. Happy to be here as always.
So, Mike, why don't you kick us off today?
Well, let's get started with the state of DevOps because our friends over there at the CDF, the Continuous Delivery Foundation, I think is what it stands for.
Yes.
They're a part of the Linux Foundation, and they have a report out that kind of did a survey of where developers are in their DevOps maturity. And it kind of seems to indicate there hasn't been a lot of progress in the last 3 or 4 years, and folks are kind of 80% say they're involved on some level, but when you look at the level of involvement, they're not that deep and more about using it occasionally for testing, and only a third are into continuous integration. And I guess my question is, and I'll start with you on this one, is that an issue in your mind? Is do we need everybody to have this, you know, massive amount of maturity, or is DevOps just kind of finding its right level by organization and each developer team will decide what's good for them?
I think this survey was paid for by the platform engineering squad. Anyway, you know, we do a show on TechStrong TV and you can check it out. It's called CD Pipeline, and it's done in cooperation with the CDF. And we actually covered this on a recent CD Pipeline show. And we actually had a platform engineering guy, two people. Well, one was the chairman of CDF and one was a guy from the Spinnaker team, you know, people, the Spinnaker governing board, and myself. And it did, unfortunately, degraded into a little bit of not a shouting match, but you know, I had to remind someone, if you don't learn history, you're destined to repeat it. And I'm not faulting their survey. I just don't buy it. I don't buy a lot of these numbers. I don't know if the sample size is big enough. I don't know what the biases were. My feeling is this. You know, Andrew Clay Schaefer, right? John's friend, Andrew. He always says the DevOps you get is the DevOps you deserve. These people get the DevOps they deserve. Mm-hmm. I do think, and it's not DevOps, when you look at any adoption wave of technology, you have the you know, the crossing the chasm model, right? You got your 15% of early adopters, and then 70% of the market is mainstream. 35% of that is, you know, the beginning of the mainstream, and 35% of that is kind of the end of the mainstream. And then the last 15% are laggards. I think it is very, very clear that DevOps has gone across the chasm to mainstream and is well into the second 35% of the mainstream. Is it adopted enterprise-wide at every large enterprise? No. But is there DevOps going on? Yes. Are people still experimenting because your DevOps is never done? Your DevOps journey is never done? Yes. Is that a reason to say, oh, DevOps, DevOps is a failure or DevOps isn't working? Absolutely not.
Mark, you want to jump in here? I know you've been around the DevOps space for a while, but what's your take on where are we on this curve?
Well, I mean, first off, I got to concur with Alan. These numbers are sort of wacky. And so I would think that there would be a lot more folks doing continuous delivery and deployment than this seems to indicate. And I think that they probably do that, but they do that in methods that are not, you know, Circle CI cloud native methods. They're probably, you know, a different patching and provisioning feedback. But I do feel like everybody wants to be DevOps. I meet a lot of folks who are simply just engineers or developers who tell me they're DevOps. And there's a lot of folks that really embody those, you know, DevOps practices that the Andrew Clay Schaeffers and the John Willises and the Patrick Dubois talked about early on. But I do think that there's a lot more folks that are talking the talk than walking the walk. But I am surprised. I would think that, you know, where does this all start? CI/CD, you know, in deploying your application, which is, and doing it effectively seems to me to be pot odds. And it seems a little low in my estimation from what the survey says.
Here's what I hear a lot of. I hear developers are kind of into the CI part of the CI/CD equation, and they kind of get that to varying degrees. I don't hear a lot of success on the CD side. It has nothing to do with the nature of the CI/CD platform. It has everything to do with the end platform that you're deploying stuff on. It doesn't have a standard set of APIs. There's a lot of snowflakes. It's very hard to automate it. I mean, one of the nice things about Kubernetes is at least you get a standard API, but it's not everywhere. So it seems to me the whole CD side of this equation is still very early stages, despite the fact that we've been doing this for a long time. It will get better, I think, but a lot of people are trying to separate or more loosely couple CI/CD because the platform engineering team might do the CD side and the developers will keep the CI side of this equation. So I think it's evolving, but I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all.
No, there definitely isn't a one-size-fits-all. I'd be interested, and I haven't seen a survey on this in a while. What percentage of people are doing, let's say, waterfall versus CI/CD? I think that's a valid way of looking at it. But I think you also got to remember that DevOps may not be the right tool or the right, you know, methodology for every instance. I think there are some times where waterfall is the right way to do things. I think there are other instances where DevOps absolutely is the right. I think there are other instances where you have to use Kubernetes and cloud native, but there are other instances where you shouldn't. Cloud on-prem. It's a wild mixed up world, except for Lola.
It is. I talk to a lot of folks who use a mix of things, right? The front end with the developers is very DevOps centered, and the back end where the deployment takes place is very waterfall centered, just because it's the nature of
waterfall. There's a lot of that. So I think we get ourselves in trouble when we try to say everything should be this or everything. The CD pipeline show, that's where they went. Everything should be guardrailed for the developer because, you know, stop. It's as I've gotten older, you know, I think I've learned that one of the most important things is you got to use the right tool for the job. Mm-hmm. And if you're using the wrong tool, you work a lot harder. Trying to fit that square peg into the round hole is just...
Does it take you more time?
It takes you more time. It takes you more effort, and it doesn't work. So I think today's developers, today's DevOps teams, today's platform engineers, today's SREs, it's about using the right tool for the job. And each job has its own parameters and its own requirements. You know,
Mark, are we too, shall we say, zealous in our opinions about what DevOps is? And maybe it seems like the people using this are tailoring it to whatever need they want. And it's, I think McVitie once said, DevOps is like water. It finds its right level in each organization.
Yeah, I think... You know, I think it's important to have a clear understanding of what it is and how that what that methodology is applied, because if you don't understand something, it's hard to, you know, manage that process. While you guys were talking, this is just intuition, but I think the cloud native folks, we're talking about the CI/CD target that you mentioned, is I would guess that they are probably more along the lines of using CI/CD, and this 10,000 people came from, you know, data that was collected by an outside firm, not the CI/CD foundation itself, it looks like. But what I did see in the appendix that's really interesting is a lot of these DevOps practices that we talk about, like source control management, CI/CD, they are in use with software developers with more experience. So 6 to 16 plus years has a lot more of the folks that are doing CI/CD, that are doing source control, that are doing all these things that make it easy. And I suspect that's because the first 6 of the years of their career, like mine, I just got hit in the head by not, you know, putting a process in place to make it repeatable. So, you know,
so they got the t-shirt.
Yeah, Benjamin Disraeli said, you know, lies, damn lies, and statistics. You know, I think the takeaway is that A, we don't have a clearly defined DevOps definition, and B, I think that it tends to be something adopted by folks, at least from this data, that have more experience. And that would be my sort of takeaway personally as well.
I got to give Mark Hinkle a shout out here. I think in all the years of doing the videos on TechShark TV, he's the first one to use a Disraeli quote.
There you go.
Kudos to you, Mark. Excellent. Excellent.
Most people would say that was Samuel Clemens, but...
No, we've had Sam Clemens quotes. Usually, rumors of my demise have been greatly exaggerated, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we've had a Disraeli Gears quote. A little Cream reference there for my music.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Yeah.
All you researchers out there, direct your emails to Mark, okay?
So. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Hey, I think we've beaten this one for a while. Let's take a quick break here on the gang, and we'll be back with, are developers embracing AI?
SecurityBoulevard.com is the leading resource for news, analysis, and education on challenges facing the cybersecurity industry. SecurityBoulevard.com covers all aspects of cybersecurity, including data security, DevSecOps, cloud security, application security, network security, security threats, and more. SecurityBoulevard.com has the largest selection of security content, featuring breaking news, blog posts, podcasts, and more. Visit www.securityboulevard.com to learn more. SecurityBoulevard.com, home of Security Bloggers Network.
All right, folks, and we're back, and we're talking about this survey that Docker did. More statistics, by the way. And it shows that a large percentage of developers are definitely using Gen AI. They're using it for everything from actual coding to documentation and all kinds of interesting capabilities. But buried in there was an interesting stat in my mind. Nearly half of them said that we're making too much of AI. They're kind of like looking at it and saying, you know, it's already old hat. It's like kind of like in their kit already, and they're kind of sitting there going, you know, I'm just doing my day job here and thanks for the little help. But they're not like going, this is changing my world. They're certainly not thinking that they're going to be made obsolete. So, Mark, let's start with you. But, you know, have we like seen the AI thing come and go so quickly now that people are taking it for granted, or what?
I think that it has been so overhyped. And I think Bill Gates has a quote about this, is that we tend to overestimate new technology trends in the beginning and underestimate them in the long term. And I think that's exactly what's happening here. Is, you know, it's AI everywhere. And as you look at these stats, everybody's interested in it, but it's the interest in the promise of AI, not the, you know, today, you know, I can't just type in something into ChatGPT and get the exact, you know, output I want. It helps. It makes it better, whether I'm developing code or writing prose or analyzing documents, but it's not a silver bullet. And I think that's probably, you know, where we're at today. I call it the sex in high school phase. Everybody's talking about it. No one's doing it. But I think there are very few are, at least. And I think that's where we're at right now.
You know what? Just a shout out. The man follows up a Benjamin Disraeli quote with a Bill Gates quote. Mark, you're on fire, man. Good for you.
I have a kid going into high school this fall, so I'm hoping it stays that way, Mark.
let me weigh in here, though, quickly. You know, I saw a survey that something like 61% of all the code that we're seeing generated now has AI fingerprints on it, meaning it was either written by AI, checked with AI, augmented with AI, or somehow AI was involved. That's an incredible amount, given the time frame for how long we've been, you know, using AI and writing code. I think, like everything else, people try to normalize, right? You get a new technology, a new tool, a new way of doing things. You try to normalize that into your routine. So they're like, oh yeah, I'm using AI, I know what AI is. You know, you ask your kid in high school, ask my kids in college, oh yeah, we're using AI to help write papers and stuff and research or what have you. So people have started normalizing AI. But to your earlier quote, Mark, you know, that we overhype in the beginning and underhype at the end, what they don't realize is that the AI we're using today is relatively rudimentary to the AI we'll probably be using even a year or 18 months ago. What I find fascinating about the whole AI adoption cycle is that, you know, we're all in tech for a long time, right? And we've all seen internet time, how the adoption cycles have shortened. I've never seen anything as shortened as AI. It seems like AI is taking adoption cycles into a wormhole, right? And it's just at warp speed.
I was just going to say, is there some subjectivity, though, to that survey where developers have been hearing from everybody, AI could replace you, AI could replace you. So on some self-preservation, wouldn't they say, well, it's not a big deal anyway? I mean, this seems like a human nature thing, they might say.
You're saying that the folks taking the survey might be a little biased.
Yeah.
There you go.
Possible.
Yeah. Same platform engineers.
I think it's one of these, it's a lot like the last subject we had where it's... It depends on where you are as a developer, right? I've talked to developers who haven't written code in years, and they love AI because now they can code again. And they're like, you know, they were never great developers in the first place, but now they're better developers. But then there's more experienced developers who are kind of like, I can't get this thing to give me the same thing back twice. And so I'm only going to use it maybe to write a script, but they would never use it for business logic. So it kind of seems to me we need to... maybe define some spectrums of usage and kind of have a little more nuance in how we're thinking about how developers use AI. Mark, I don't know, you code a little bit. What do you think?
So I think you and Bonnie both hit on something is we see in the report 64% use AI for work, but 33% do coding and 29% do documentation. And that's a big thing. So if you're looking at it, documentation, writing tests, those two things are almost as high in the percentages. And those things are not nearly as difficult. Well, writing tests are time-consuming. Documentation is time-consuming, but not as difficult as writing good code. in my personal opinion. So I think that they're seeing a big uptick, and this is anecdotally what I hear as well, is people who don't like to write documentation now have an easy way to write good documentation and to write their unit tests. At the end of the day, if it's a complex piece of code, that's still, you know, an architect or a senior developer skill that I don't feel like, GitHub Copilot or, you know, some of these other sensationalized things like Devin can get a touch.
I think it will get better, though, because to your point, the underlying engines are getting smarter. There's more parameters in there. The context windows are getting larger. It's more expensive to run as a result, but we can train it using a set of code that's been vetted. I think if you look at ChatGPT, they pull code from everywhere they can find, and you get to an average, and the average is kind of relatively low. I think there's a lot of vulnerabilities in that code that gets generated because it came from code that has vulnerabilities. But it seems to me the whole thing is going to get a lot better in, 9 months, maybe sooner. It just depends on how much you're willing to spend to drive the outputs you want. So there'll be tiers.
Just one other point to both your and Alan's point is everything we're doing today is accretive towards the result we're going to get tomorrow. And that's one of the reasons is this training is accretive to making it better every single day versus some previous technologies did not build necessarily in the same way as AI does.
All right. Let me ask you the core question then. Would you tell your kids to become developers today based on the fact that we have all these AI capabilities, or would you say that's just going to be a service you're going to call?
That's a great question. Sure. You know, Benjamin Disraeli said, don't let your kids grow up to be AI engineers. But no, seriously, I've had this conversation with both of my sons, one who's going to be a sports journalist broadcaster, one who's going to law school. I had the same conversation with one of my very good friend's sons who's in college right now as a marketing major. And the thing I ask all three of them is when you think about where you're going and what you're going to do in your life and what you want to do, how is AI going to play into that? Is it going to replace you? Is it going to enhance you? Is it a non-factor, right? And let's be honest and take a hard look at it. And first of all, who the hell knows for sure? But we'd like to think, and based upon previous technology adoption cycles, that the smarter people learn how to take that technology and enhance their skill set, upskill, enhance their value as an employee or an entrepreneur or what have you. However, there are always people who are casualties of new technology, right? Typewriter manufacturers have had a hard time. IBM at one time made a good business from those Selectrics.
A vintage typewriter is very expensive, though.
Yeah, first find someone to use it, right? The whiteout people and the what was the little white thing you would put in, the correct type thing or whatever. So I truly believe that, hey, if you're Mark Hinkle's age or, heaven forbid, my age, and you're a coder, you don't got to worry about AI replacing you. But my kid who's in college now or high school or just coming out, I would think, by let's say the year 2035, 10 years from now or so, they got to think long and hard about what being a developer means. Is it just a glorified prompt engineer telling the AI what to write? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, I'm sorry if that upsets people, but I think that's the crux of it.
I wonder what AI would say if you put that question in. Would AI be biased to itself and say, well, that's of course I'm going to take over everything?
No, I think according to the second law of AI robotics, okay, It'll say, no, we would never take
over
a human.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I don't.
Mark, I'd like to get your take on that because I believe that there is a way software needs to be constructed that requires a sense of flow and logic that I'm not sure the machine is ever quite going to get to. So there's a difference between writing code and maybe orchestrating some tasks and actually constructing the application. So where do you think that person-to-machine interface is going to be.
You know, there's a reason why we take those philosophy classes like Introduction to Logic when you get a comp sci degree, other than the fact that it keeps us out of the computer labs. But I think that critical thinking, that ability to put stuff together, is still going to be essential. I think it's going to be more about guiding it, but not so much about, you know, writing JavaScript or Go or Rust or whatever for the do whatever's going on. And just for the record, while you guys were pontificating about what AI would tell you about growing demand for developers, according to ChatGPT, despite the advances in AI, the demand for skilled software developers continues to rise. So,
I think it's covering its tracks.
Hold on a minute. How much money does Microsoft have invested in OpenAI again?
I mean, again, back to what I said in the previous block. You got to, you know, it's not the AI of today. It's the AI of tomorrow you got to be thinking of. And that, to me, is what this question is. Anyway, fascinating stuff. You know, I say this in all honesty to all of our watchers and readers and listeners out there. It's not the effect it's going to have on us here on the show. But if you've got children or you're a young person coming out of school, recently out of school, you got to be, and whether you're a coder or a marketer or a lawyer or a doctor, you got to be thinking about what role is AI going to have on my career going forward, right? And you could, and there's two kind of reactions to this. You could curl up in a fetal position and say, woe is me, what's the sense of, you know, going forward? Or you could say, how do I make my lemonade out of the lemons here and leverage this thing to be even more valuable? And I think that's what separates the winners from the losers.
All right.
All right, we're going to take a break. No.
I was just going to say, so the AI bear is chasing us, and I just got to be faster than the next guy.
That's always the case, isn't it? All right, we're going to take a break here on The Gang. We'll be back in a second.
All right, folks, we're back one more time, and we're talking now about the rise of MLOps, otherwise known as machine learning operations. And this is the whole process used to construct the AI model, which is different than the applying of the AI model into something that feels more like what we call AI ops, which is a slightly different connotation for the thing. But if we are getting to the point now where AI is going to be pervasive, it seems like we're reaching a point where MLOps needs to be everywhere. And the question is where does MLOps begin and where does DevOps end and where's the handoffs and how is all that going to come to play? Mark, I know you've been kind of messing around in this whole AI space for a while, but it seems to me that maybe the data scientists should build the models and the DevOps team should deploy them. But what's your sense of what's going on?
You're hitting right in my heart there. The fact that we have like little labels and fiefdoms of like, it made sense when MLOps was a very specialized discipline and didn't do a lot in production. Now it's going to be pervasive across the enterprise. It's with GenAI. And the funny thing is, you mentioned it, AI ops versus MLOps. Like, do we got to get that fine-grained or do we just have to adopt GenAI and ML throughout the enterprise and, you know, leverage the systems that are already in place to manage them. We're just going to have to evolve them. That's my, you know, my very opinionated thoughts on it.
I don't think that's so opinionated, but you're right. I think we got to get over ourselves on that. To me, though, I take a very simplistic, I'm a simple person. I take a very simplistic view towards the difference, you know, the divisions between, let's call it ML ops. And if you're saying AI ops involves Gen AI, that's one thing. I think a lot of people say AI ops and it's interchangeable with ML ops. So we got to get that clear. Are you talking about machine learning, pattern recognition kind of stuff? Or are you talking about generative AI kind of thing? And they're not the same. I think one is an igniter for the other, right? But they're not the same. But when I look, to me, the whole ML ops thing is just what I said. It's about pattern recognition. It's a big data thing, right? I remember when, I think I was still writing at Network World, Hadoop. Everybody remembers Hadoop, right? Hadoop came out of Yahoo. And it was this idea of, my God, the data sets we're dealing with. It's one thing to put it in an Oracle or a SQL or DB2 or whatever, but to get actionable intelligence, to recognize to make that reams and reams of data useful, we've got to be able to get our hands around big data, these big data. And we've got to run programs that allow us to get actionable intelligence from oodles and oodles of data. To me, that was ML ops, and it's still ML ops. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, today, the amount of data that, whether you're a developer or a DevOps or a platform engineer or an SRE or an observability engineer, whatever you want to call it, the amount of data that we process is so vast that it's a big data problem. Everything's a big data problem. And the best solution for big data problems is MLOps.
I think this issue is the MLOps in general is kind of where DevOps was a decade ago. If you kind of look at the models themselves, you can't patch the model. You have to pretty much replace the entire model. They don't really have a sense of what a version control system is for the model. So when you're kind of rolling out the model and you want to roll back parts of it, that's not quite as mature as it could be either. And so I think that the whole space could benefit from some DevOps thinking. It's just, it's a different kind of artifact. So I don't know, Mark, maybe you have some thoughts here about how does that artifact get managed differently from other software artifacts? And can I do that in a pipeline where I'm updating code, you know, a couple of times a week versus an artifact that's an AI model might not be updated every once a month, maybe? I don't know.
So I think that there's, you know, a couple things to unpack there is I think that the ML ops practices, so the ML ops need to meet the DevOps. They do have a set of tests for testing these things to make sure that they're fair and unbiased and they're accurate. I just did what Alan says people do is I just munged ML ops and AI ops into one great big puddle, but some of those tests already exist. So I think you'll see things like Datadog and observability platforms like Honeycomb and others incorporate those same kind of tests, but instead of performance based on throughput and CPU usage, they're going to be on fairness and bias. They're going to be on accuracy. It's just automating a test against, you know, a machine service. Then the other thing is there is, you know, sort of inklings of that patching and provisioning within the model, these large language models that will probably make it there. So there's something called LoRA, which is the patching and provisioning around those large language models, but they're not necessarily, as you mentioned, they're not nearly as mature as like patching and provisioning, you know, production services, unless you read that, you know, continuous delivery survey from earlier, then it's probably right on target. But anyhow, I think that they basically what we need to do is map these sort of ML ops, AI ops into the DevOps and the operations practices that are already enterprise wide, because they're not, the context is different, but you know, the methods are not all that dissimilar in how you would patch, provision, monitor, you know, do those deployments. They're just, you know, just like a new system, they're a little different.
Seems like all these artifacts at the end of the day wind up in some sort of Git repository somewhere. So if that's where they all are and they all have to be integrated at the back end, seems to stand to reason that somewhere between the Git repository and the delivery, there needs to be a unified workflow.
Yeah. I think this is a work in progress. I think the Gen AI aspect of it is going to be is that the ML ops is going to do the herding and the sorting, if you will, based upon that, going to drive some patterns, some conclusions that Gen AI then builds on. And that's where a lot of the automation will come in, a lot of the actionable intelligence will come in, and a lot of, you know, real, maybe even coding comes in, right? Think of ML ops on a feedback loop, right? You get your app out there, you got a feedback loop, you got all this data come in, and ML ops does its thing. AI ops or AI, Gen AI grabs that, and the next iteration of your code.
Mark, do you think the data science teams are willing to give up a lot of this operational stuff? Or are they going to be like the old-fashioned tree huggers and they're going to be like, nope, it's mine. I will not give this up to you.
Well, I mean, the data science folks are really the rock stars in the enterprise. Everybody's scrambling for them. So before, I feel like they were sort of the, you know, pointy-headed, you know, deep tech folks in the back room, and now they're sort of the rock stars of the enterprise. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think that they'll, you know, they're going to have their domain knowledge is one of the most valuable assets these companies have now. So I think they'll probably, you know, help inform how this works. Just one point on what Alan said there is I think the, you know, the ML leaders or the ML data scientists are going to use that to show them how to do observability around AI. And then the Gen AI is actually, so that's going to be the monitoring. And then the Gen AI is going to be the orchestration and the sort of artificially intelligent enterprise, in my opinion.
Love to get your opinion on this one thing since you kind of, you know, you've been with us for a while now. Did you ever occur to you that there were so many fiefdoms in IT and that we could be arguing over so many little pieces of this thing when you first started? And
You're right. I mean, you can make an analogy to a lot of different things where everybody's trying to hold on to what's theirs. But it makes sense, though, because as AI grows and machine learning has to do more, and we're constantly getting data, and obviously everybody wants, like ChatGPT, for example, to improve, be better, be faster. It makes sense to me that that would be yet another division. I don't know if we're going to have a new website, ML.
I think we do cover a lot of ML ops over on the AI site.
They have an AI builder section on there AI. That very purpose.
Yep. But look, it's fascinating stuff. And again, it's part of this, not where we are today, but where we're going tomorrow conversation. That's going to wrap up, I think, our Tech Strong Gang for this beautiful Thursday. Stay tuned. We have a lot of good stuff coming up on Tech Strong TV today, including some follow-up video and commentary on the announcement yesterday on Tech Strong Group joining the Futurum Group. So check that out. Until then, or until our next Tech Strong Gang, which I guess will be Monday. This is Alan Schimmel for Tech Strong Gang. We're out.
DevOps.com is the number one online destination for DevOps education and community building. DevOps.com covers all aspects of DevOps, including DevOps best practices and tools, DevOps culture, DevSecOps, business impact, continuous testing, continuous delivery, and more. DevOps.com has the largest collection of original DevOps content, featuring breaking news, blog posts, podcasts, and more. Visit www.devops.com to learn more. DevOps.com, where the world meets DevOps.